Welcome back. Or, if it's your first time, welcome to this, my letter from the back, dated Friday, 24th of July, 2020. This is my endeavour to recreate Alistair Cook's Letter from America that lasted on Radio 4 for over 50 years. And it's my attempt to glance back on the week whilst you ease yourself back into your favourite chair, get your breath back, and look forward to the weekend. In my first ever letter from the back at the beginning of lockdown in March, I quoted the Irish poet Seamus Heaney, who said, "If we can winter this out, we can summer anywhere." And I thought of this quote as the sun was rising in a clear blue sky as I boarded an Anthony's Travel, simply the best, coach at 5:45 a.m. on Monday morning. The skies were blue and the sun was shining. And I was about to travel in a convoy to London with 500 other coaches. Now, these coaches will not be taking any holidaymakers or any day trippers anywhere this summer or even this coming winter. All 500 coaches were heading for the Honk for Hope protest rally through Parliament Square. In last week's letter from the back, I conjured up a mental image of Michael Caine crouching down at the back of a gold-laden coach as it teetered on the edge of a vertical cliff edge somewhere in the Italian Alps. So it's only fitting the Tsar coach commenced its long march to London on the M6, slicing through the green fields of the Cheshire countryside. I could hear, admittedly only in my head, the opening song to the iconic movie The Italian Job with Michael Caine. And you don't need me to tell you that the opening song from The Italian Job is Matt Munro singing "Queste giorni quando viene il bel sole." Now, this is a discerning and forgiving audience on the letter from the back, so I'm sure that you will overlook my flat northern vowels and understand that this can be translated from Italian into "on days like these." The lyrics of the song continue to say, "On days like these, when skies are blue and fields are green, I look around and think what might have been." The music for the movie was scored by Quincy Jones. No relation, alas, no relation. But this does get me thinking about my relations, especially my paternal grandparents, and what might have been. My grandmother was very beautiful, or so it would have seemed from the photographs that I have on my office wall. And my grandfather was moderately wealthy. At least he looks moderately wealthy again from the photographs that I have on my office wall. Now, I never met my grandmother, as she died in childbirth with my father later on in the year 1939. Now, in 1939, my grandfather had a successful business in Liverpool and a young family. Within 12 months, he had lost a wife, a daughter, and a business, the latter to the bombing of Liverpool by the Luftwaffe. This was completely out of his control and out of the blue, or to be precise, not out of blue skies, but out of the night skies above Liverpool. But the point is made. As a successful businessman, I feel sure that my grandfather would have known and accepted that capitalism without bankruptcy is like Christianity without hell. The two go hand in hand. But it must have been painful, and it must be painful when you lose a business through no commercial fault of your own or not due to your personal decision-making. In typical stiff upper lip fashion, my grandfather never mentioned any of this to me, nor did my aunt, who literally had to climb out of the coal hole after being dug out from the cellar of her bombed house. So I was thinking about past battles as our pink lady of a coach made its way down the M6. And after Cheshire, we passed through Shrewsbury, or Shropshire, which was coincidental, as this week was the anniversary of the Battle of Shrewsbury on the 21st of July, 1403. And this battle occurred when the Lancastrian King Henry IV faced a rebel army led by Harry Hotspur Percy from Northumberland. And this was the first ever battle when English archers faced each other on English soil. The battle was medieval and therefore brutal. So much so that the king's envoy, Thomas Walsingham, wrote at the time that the king's men fell like leaves in autumn. And I fear that if the government doesn't intervene to heed the plight of the coach industry, then coach companies, some third generation companies, who are natural, resilient, independent, taxpaying, conservative with a small and large C voters, are also going to fall like leaves in autumn. And this fallout will take decades to remedy, if it's remedied at all. And the effect for the 42,000 employees who work within the coaching industry, and in so doing contribute £6 billion per year to the UK economy, is going to be catastrophic. But autumn's still weeks away. And on this delightful Monday, 500 coaches did not just show up in London, they arrived. They arrived with purpose and positivity, and in a lawful but horn-honking way, showed parliamentarians both their enthusiasm and their plight. For operators who display their family name in 4-foot letters on the side of pristine coaches, their enthusiasm was only matched by the compelling human interest stories of companies in danger of crumbling into bankruptcy, with family homes being repossessed due to personal guarantees being called in as a result of circumstances that could never have been foreseen by any reasonable businessman. MPs not only saw the elephantine silhouettes of lumbering, majestic coaches travelling past their place of work at the Palace of Westminster, but they clearly heard them. I know this because the police were asked by the MPs to advise the coach operators to stop their honking. Now, I didn't witness all 500 coaches passing through Parliament Square, so I can't comment if this request was acceded to or simply inspired greater and louder honking. Now, it's said that Harry Hotspur was so called, he was called Hotspur, because he travelled at speed. And we went through Parliament Square very slowly, but after that, our convoy hot-footed it north to Luton, where the rally congregated to compare notes. I'm blessed with the ability to sleep anywhere, at any time, and at will. And I confess that I had a snooze on the comfortable Anthony's travel coach. I awoke as the coach pulled into the car park, and as I was getting off the coach, coming out of my slumber, I was handed a microphone and invited to address the assembled crowd. I made one blooper in my address by referring to the multitude of coaches in front of me as lorries, but I can explain that away by my recent dozing. Ordinarily, I like to prepare and edit a speech or a submission to court, but no preparation was allowed, so I literally just spoke from the heart. And so Harry Hotspur came from Northumberland, And I opened my address by saying that the rally dynamo was from the north, and that dynamo is Jenna Rush from North East Coach Travel. Jenna, from nothing, has produced a rally of 500 coaches in London inside of a month. I advised the crowd that she was the Angel of the North. As most people know, the Angel of the North is a contemporary statue overlooking the A1, welcoming travellers and locals alike to Tyne and Wear. Some people even know it was designed by Anthony Gormley, and it's based on a cast of his own body and is Britain's largest sculpture and the largest angel sculpture in the world. But not everybody knows that it was designed to signify that beneath the site of its construction, coal miners worked in the dark for 2 centuries. Also, it was designed to grasp the transition from the industrial age to the informational age. And finally, it was designed to serve as a focus for our evolving hopes and fears. I drew the analogy that for many years, coach operators had worked in the dark and had not worked together. But Monday saw them come to the light and cooperate and collaborate for the greater good. Furthermore, they have made the transition to the information age. Many of the coaches in front of me had Wi-Fi, and all of them bristled with sat-nav tracking and IT. But they need hope. Many operators have come down from the northeast, like my client and friend Andrew Scott of Stanley Travel, on what I would describe as a latter-day Jarrow March. As Geordies, I feel sure that Jenna and Andrew will pay great tribute to the resilience and poverty of the 1920s marchers, whose bravery and fortitude exceeds the woes of today. But perhaps the marchers of old might celebrate their modern-day brethren, who are drawing respectful inspiration from the need to stand up for what is right and true for the working man. The principle of the comparison holds in that. Both protests involved working people fearful of their jobs and how they will provide for their families. At the rally, I saw grown men cry. They were seeing everything they've ever worked for crumbling underneath their feet, including the loss of the family home in which their children sleep. What can you say to provide comfort to such a man? One speaker before the assembled crowd of 150 conceded that he could not read nor write, as he was heavily dyslexic, which was not identified during his school days. This man had worked nights to buy his own coach, which he stood in front of and was utterly gleaming. This coach and the man's home upon which the coach is secured is facing repossession. I didn't have the words to provide comfort to him, but the words I have found for the crowd were that they were the little people, the little business people upon which Great Britain depends and depends to be great. The words that I did find were that whilst my grandfather's business was suffering during the Liverpool Blitz of the 1940, 336,000 British and Allied soldiers were stranded on the beaches of Dunkirk, and the Royal Navy destroyers could not make it into the shallow waters to rescue the men, and accordingly, Operation Dynamo swung into action. This involved 850 little boats leaving Ramsgate to sail across the channel to ferry soldiers back to Blighty. The smallest of the boats was named Tamzine and was just 15 feet long, the length of a minibus that was also represented in the Honk for Hope protest. There were no multinational PLCs or ocean-going liners bringing the army back to Britain to prepare and fight back against Nazi Germany. And it is the little coach operators that have been left behind by government bailouts for commercial transport operators. Coach operators are the Cinderella of the transport world, and they don't appear to be going to the ball. They need help now to ensure that the industry survives. Coach operators could point to all the good they have done for this nation. Tom James of York Pullman pointed out that when the government-appointed PLC contractor failed to deliver on their contract just weeks before the London Olympics, it was Proctor's Coaches of Yorkshire who organised 200 coaches at short notice to ensure that the Olympics went ahead without a glitch. When the computer system failed the day before the opening ceremony, it was coach transport managers who stepped in to save the day. When the rail network fails its passengers, it's coach operators who step in to ensure that commuters even, make it back home. And when the ash cloud wreaked havoc within the skies of Europe, it was coach companies and their flexibility that filled the gap to get people back home. But it's not possible to appeal to government's gratitude or mercy. That's not a criticism, as these are extraordinary times and there are many legitimate calls upon the public purse. The industry is appealing to the self-interest of government, as to allow hard-working family businesses to fail now will jeopardise the jobs of 42,000 employees. Do we really want family businesses to fail now, with the demand to be mopped up next year by some foreign private equity company buying up British coaches at a discount just to operate a monopoly and return their profits overseas rather than to the UK tax coffers? I accept that business is not fair. The chap who designed the Nike's swoosh got paid just $35, and the musician who played saxophone on the song Baker Street got just £27.50. So I'm not appealing to the government through sheer sentimentality. This week, British Airways retired its fleet of 747s, which were a masterpiece of industrialised capitalism. The design of the 747 was not just practical, but also emotional. The designer, whoever it might be, took the raw materials of titanium, aluminium, steel, rubber, glass, to make surely one of the greatest designs of all time. But the reality is the 747 is the past, and it's not the future of air transportation. But the coaches in Parliament Square are the future of green transportation within this, our green and pleasant land. All of the coaches on the rally were LEZ compliant. The owners had borrowed money against their houses to invest in Euro 6 engines to ensure that the coaches have the least emissions. The operators had borrowed money to make their coaches compliant with disability regulations imposed upon them by government. These coaches can cost £250,000 each. And I know that operators cannot invest without securing finance and credit secured upon their family homes. So one of the simple requests from the operators is for the government to legislate to provide an extended finance holiday. Basically, the finance agreements should be put on hold during this dead 18-month winter so that operators can have breathing space and come back with a vengeance into the market in summer 2021. Coaching is a business of paradoxes. It's a symphony of the beauty and the brutal, a cross between a vicar's tea party and a bullfight. It's a competitive industry, and coach companies have succeeded by taking risks and implementing innovations and good ideas. To let all of those ideas and innovations go to the wall would be an immense mistake for the UK economy. It was splendid to see the president of the Confederation of Passenger Transport, Steve Whiteway, clapping the coaches into Parliament Square and clapping them out again. His written address on Friday afternoon was Churchillian as the CPT prepared to meet the government to bring the concerns of the coach operators, not just their honking, into the Palace of Westminster. Now, I'm no expert, but the interaction between business and politicians can be like teaching cats to swim, frustrating for both the teacher and the learner alike, and you don't always make progress. Let us hope that next week there is a constructive meeting for the benefit of everyone. I haven't been inside a bank in years, and with the advent of online shopping, I suspect it'll be a long time before I go into a shop. Now, I'm not emotionally attached to either, to be honest, and I might not miss them if they go from the high street, but this cannot be said for coaches that are providing a service that can't be taken online or undertaken virtually. So let's hope that the government will understand that the brutal competition in the coaching industry has created the efficient coaching industry that exists in this country today. And hopefully government will understand that small business isn't simply a little version of big business. They have fewer meetings, fewer resources, and fewer complaints. But the biggest advantage is that a small business is, it can look into the eyes of its customers and vice versa. So coach operators have figured out what people need and they've brought it to them. The demand will return and the suppliers for this demand simply need breathing space. Please, would you let me finish by returning to the Matt Monro song and his days like these, where he might reminisce about what might have been. This week, my professional life went full circle. In 1994, I was a very junior solicitor and I was invited to take part in a panel discussion on the radio, on Radio 5 Live, as it happens. I adored the experience to the extent that I contemplated finishing my legal career before it had even started to take a diversion into broadcasting. I adore radio, hence this homage to Alistair Cook and his one-man radio show. But back then, I just started acting for a large transport operator and decided against making the jump. This client introduced me to transport and offered me an equally rewarding career. But on Monday, whilst travelling back from London, I was interviewed by Leanne Daniels for the ITT Hub Lunch with Liam. I confessed I enjoyed the experience and it renewed my interest in broadcasting. I wonder if broadcasting will have me back. Now, I'm going to finish with my own catchphrase, but some of you have told me that this phrase has already been used by a past governor of California, and I'm simply recycling it. But nonetheless, I'm going to bash on. Thank you for listening, and God willing, I'll be back next week.